Welcome to the Mama Bear Apologetics Podcast,
a podcast where we teach you to roar like a mother.
And by roar, we mean recognize the message, offer discernment, argue for a healthier approach, and reinforce these ideas with your kids.
Unless you want to growl around your house. I mean, that's cool too. You're like, check it. We keep it reals.
That's so bad.
You're awesome.
Mama Bear Apologetics is a listener-supported program, so if you like what we do, head on over to the Mama Bear Apologetics website and click support.
It's time to rise up, ladies.
Rise up, Mama Bears. This might not affect your faith,
but it might affect your children's.
Welcome to another episode of Mama Bear Apologetics. I'm Hillary.
And I'm Amy.
And with us, we have Joel Berry from the Babylon Bee.
Hey.
I consider this a moment of arrival for Mama Bear Apologetics that the Babylon Bee would come on our show. But they too have just released a book in the Babylon Bee's Guide to Wokeness. But we're not going to talk about the book because you can go get the book. And where can they get the book, Joel?
Anywhere fine books are sold, yep. Amazon, Barnes Noble, Books A Million, here pretty soon, probably in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have it up on our store, thebabylonbee.com too. Ah. So you can buy it directly from us.
Very cool. Yep. So we're going to go through a couple questions with him today, just some of the more serious questions and then some of the more fun questions, because you can't talk to the Babylon Bee and keep it all theological, but we're going to make it a little theological.
I love it. Before we start, I just got to say, I love the name of your podcast, Mama Bear.
Thank
Apologetics.
You.
It's been a good year for mama bears, I feel like.
It has. I have people sending me stuff. They're like, are you involved with this? Are you involved with this? Because it's like different people coming up, especially with all the school board stuff going on, saying it's like mama bears are rising up. And they're like, I thought they were going to mention your organization, but no, they didn't. Unfortunately.
Well, you know, part of me somehow wishes that that the left would keep pressing these issues, because you mess with a mama bear's kids, that's a surefire way to invite trouble on yourself. So
yep, you just opened up a can that you cannot close. So
that's right.
Beware. Yeah. Yeah, and I kind of like to think that whenever God, because the mama bear name, what like came to me back in, I don't know, 2015, was it 2015? It might have even been 2014 before we, like long before we started. Yeah. And there was just like this thing, this has to happen. So I figure when God speaks, he very rarely talks to just one person. So I think he's been raising up mama bears for quite a while, because he knew there was going to be a time to come when basically when people need to put their big kid panties on and mama bears are going to get it done.
Yeah. I hope he continues to do so.
Yes, I agree. I absolutely agree. And I love seeing what the women are doing. They are waking up, and people are discovering it. It's not a pretty sight if you get in the way. So for those of our audience who do not, I mean, if you've been living under a rock, that don't know what the Babylon Bee is. So tell us who you are, kind of how you started, and what kind of the mission is behind the Babylon Bee.
Yeah. So my name is Joel Berry. I know, I guess you've introduced me. I'm not good at this. I'm the managing editor of the Babylon Bee. I came on about 2 years ago is when I started working for the Bee. But the Bee's been around for a little over 4 years. It was founded by a guy named Adam Ford. And we were kind of inspired by what The Onion does. So if you're familiar with The Onion, kind of the very dry AP style news headlines that are satirical in nature. He got the idea for the first time after reading an Onion headline after the Obergefell decision, when the Supreme Court redefined what marriage is. And the Onion headline was actually pretty clever, and it kind of made him chuckle in spite of himself. And it went like, four Supreme Court justices suddenly realized they will be the villains in an upcoming Oscar-winning movie. And right, you're laughing. It's we don't agree with their perspective, obviously, but you can't help but chuckle at the cleverness of the joke. And so Adam thought, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't Christians doing this? I mean, there's plenty of stuff on our side that for us to laugh about. And so he started the Babylon Bee kind of just on a whim. Kyle Mann came along soon after, and I don't think anyone guessed how big it would get. It got huge very quickly, started out doing mostly church humor, you know, inside church jokes. And it just grew from there. So I started as a fan myself. I was a subscriber. I started writing for the Bee in my kind of part-time. I was in sales before that. And kind of one thing led to another. I guess I had a knack for it, and they brought me on full time. So I've been doing that ever since. It's a blast.
Nice. And so what do you see as kind of the role of humor playing in, you know, apologetics, evangelism, and just kind of that whole culture?
Yeah. Well, humor is a really powerful thing because, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times it has a way of cutting through the noise more quickly and more effectively than, you know, say a book or a 12-page think piece might do. When you can just kind of cut to the heart of things, say it in a witty way and make people laugh in spite of themselves, whether or not they agree with you, it has a way of kind of stirring up that conversation very effectively. And I think that's something that traditionally the secular world has been very good at. I mean, mm-hmm. they've always been very effective at selling their point of view, their worldview through humor in a very winsome way. And so mm-hmm. it is heartening to see Christians catching on to that as they are. So I hope that the Babylon Bee will really be just the first of many of mm-hmm. these sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some examples do you have of like where you've seen something, or maybe you've gotten an email from somewhere where, you know, you were kind of making a joke at something, but they revealed, wow, that actually caused them to start thinking about the issues. Can you think of any particular times?
No, I can't think of any specific times related to a specific article, but mm-hmm. we do get a lot of emails, a lot of letters from people who kind of started out as casual fans who were either agnostics, atheists, you know, moderate progressives, mm-hmm. And just enjoyed the silliness of our content. And we've had people convert and become Christians in part due to our influence, which we think is it's hilarious that God is using us that way. But I think generally speaking, the feedback, you know, centers around the idea that, you know, people don't expect Christians to be funny. You know, we kind of have this reputation as being these dour, self-important, self-righteous, you know, mm-hmm. group of people. And I think for a lot of folks, you know, what the Bee does in pointing the satire towards ourselves, I mean, we make fun of ourselves a lot. I think it kind of humanizes us a little bit and causes people to maybe give our point of view a second look or consider it more than they otherwise would.
Yeah. Or sometimes it's like to recognize that we're not immune from doing ridiculous things. And when someone can point it out a way when you laugh, instead of someone just straight up criticizing, it's like you can almost receive that critique better.
Absolutely. And
that is something that we as Christians need to be doing is, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, unbelievers, it's just wickedness loves wickedness, dark loves dark. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of examples where it is someone who has been hurt by the church that has a legitimate grievance and we're not looking closely at it. And then when we can put it in a way to where it's like, ha, that's kind of true. We can kind of self-critique a little bit.
Yeah, I think part of the involuntary laughter that comes from laughing at a funny joke is rooted in this very subconscious shared acknowledgement of mankind's like sinfulness, or you mm-hmm. could say silliness. You know, sin is missing the mark. And I liken it to slipping on a banana peel. I mean, there's, you know, we are all, whether we're Christians, whether we're on the right or the left, we all are very proud, self-important people. Many times we are hypocrites. We fail all the time. And I think a good joke can kind of remind people of that we're all in the same boat, you know, ultimately, from our perspective, you know, we're in the same boat before God as sinners, and being able to kind of subtly remind people of that, I think is usually the start of a good conversation. Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I've noticed, especially within ministry is, like you said, there's almost this sort of unspoken rule that you're not allowed to be funny in ministry. And it's funny because I've been on podcasts before with pastors who have actually gotten emails and kind of like hate mail, so to speak, like, oh my gosh, you were laughing during this discussion of theology. How dare you be so irreverent? And it's like, oh my goodness, did you not see Elijah? I mean, that dude was snarky to the core.
Yes, he was. Is your God sitting on a toilet?
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Maybe he's asleep.
Yeah.
I know. And that's one thing I've noticed, and probably you have too, is that when you can be lighthearted and actually have a personality, so to speak, when it comes to ministry, people are so excited. There's so many people that have come up and like, oh my gosh, you're like a human being. We can actually laugh and joke. Have you noticed that it sort of, and maybe we already asked this, but it allows for more conversation. Like it allows that vulnerability there of, okay, you know, we can both recognize that we're not trying to one-up one another theologically, yeah, that we can just kind of goof around and just have these discussions. And it sort of takes the tension out of things.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm always kind of dumbfounded by, I get the question in almost every single interview, some form of the question, you know, how do you reconcile what you do in telling jokes with your Christianity?
Really?
And I'm always yes, like, what is that? Like, what kind of a question is
What's
that?
What's there to reconcile, man?
I see there being no conflict there. And you gave a great example with Elisha and the prophets of Baal. Mm-hmm. You know, you can look at the book of Isaiah, like the way he mocked their idolatry, you know, make sure you like nail down your idol because it might fall over in the wind, you know? And, you know, even Jesus, I think a lot of the humor gets lost in translation over time and culture, yeah, and language differences. But, you know, things that he said, you know, kind of hyperbolic things like, you know, it's easier for a camel to walk through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. I mean, that's kind of a humorous, satirical statement. I mean, it almost sounds like it could be a Babylon Bee article,
yeah,
or a,
yeah,
headline. And so I think, yeah, there's plenty of examples in the Bible that that tell us that humor is yeah, it's a part of the human experience. God created, mm-hmm, humor. There's no conflict with Christianity. And I think that, yeah, we have to have the confidence as Christians in our worldview to know that, you know, our worldview can stand up to a little lighthearted ribbing every now, mm-hmm, and then. That, you know, G.K. Chesterton, at the Bee, we're big fans of the great English writer, G.K. Chesterton. And one of the things he said was that the test of a good religion is whether or not you can laugh at it. And so, you know, we know that if our worldview can stand up to a little bit of laughter, mm-hmm, we kind of throw the challenge out there, you know, can your worldview do the same, you know? And for a lot of people in the woke movement, that's not true.
That's a good point of just the idea, can it withstand that laughter? So one of the things that we're seeing happening is anybody who, like, all comedians are getting canceled, and like some of the movies that you watch in retrospect that my husband and I will be sitting there going, oh, you couldn't make that joke nowadays. I mean, Blazing Saddles would have never happened in the time here. What do you see we have as a society, some of the consequences of making humor so serious and not being able to laugh? Like what do you see like maybe happening as on a societal level, on a humanity level, with, mm-hmm, taking out that piece of humanity?
Yeah, I don't know. I know is that it's not good. Mm-hmm. it's you know, the example you gave of Blazing Saddles, I feel like the jokes in that film were almost described a healthier culture than what we have now. Mm-hmm. I think you joke with your friends, you know, you joke, yes, with people that yes, you love and care about. You know, if you could be a fly on the wall at my Thanksgiving dinners, you know, that's our love language is sarcasm. We just, yes, roast each other all day. Uh-huh, we love it. Yeah. We love it, you know? And when you take that away from people, you know, and it's just been this perfect storm of, you know, what happened last year with kind of like George Floyd and the BLM, and then the lockdowns. We were locked down in our homes. It became a virtuous thing to cut yourself off from your friends and neighbors, and it became a lot easier to see other people in terms of, you know, the flag that's on their profile picture, or the, you know, the ideological, you know, screeds that they post online. And you really lose a lot of that, just the silliness that comes in the awkwardness and the humor that comes in just everyday human interactions. And so, yeah, I don't know where this is going, but I hope we get it back, because it's really bad. You talk to people who survived, you know, the Soviet Union and some of these awful totalitarian regimes. They say that humor was kind of the last thing to die. Like, mm, when when humor is gone, you know that there's like, you've reached the point of no return. And so I hope we're fighting for, you know, I think there's promising signs. You see people like Dave Chappelle, Bill Maher, who, you know, in spite of the fact that they are on the left and we don't agree with their worldview, they still have this allegiance to the truth that is causing them to take these courageous stands against this kind of this woke culture. So I'm encouraged. I hope the pendulum swings back the other way.
Yeah, I do too. And in fact, I think that like, if you think about all the lockdowns and what was happening, we just have, I mean, if you look at all the studies, like mental health has just plummeted for people. And I see humor as being like this great tension breaker. I have one of my best examples is, have you ever heard of the Bible and Beer Consortium that's in Dallas, Texas?
No.
Okay. I think y'all would love it. So it's done by this guy named Ezra Boggs, they're sponsored by like different tobacco or not tobacco, but like pipe
breweries.
People. Yeah. And breweries and stuff like that. So he's got like one of those long, like prophetic beards and smokes a pipe.
Sounds like my people.
Yeah. He looks like an Ezra. But so he has Christians and atheists come together at different times, like at different bars or whatever. And then they'll have a speaker. They'll either have a Christian speaker or they'll have a debate, like William Lane Craig has done. Oh, wow. You know, debates or presentations, and you'll have half the room that's atheist there. And there's this one night where, are you familiar with who Dan Barker is?
Vaguely.
Yeah. He started the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Yeah.
Very, very anti-religious of anything. It's like, this is the group that tried to get the Star of David taken down at the Holocaust Museum. Like it doesn't matter which kind of religion, they just want freedom from religion. So it was him and a friend of mine, Justin Bass, who's a pastor. And this is in Texas, and I can't remember what month. It wasn't like super duper hot, but it's still Texas, so it's hot enough. Yeah. The air conditioning went out. And so we have Justin Bass and Dan Barker up there, and things are getting tense, 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 and you can feel people starting to just bristle because it's also hot. Yeah. And come time for the Q&A, I lean over to my husband. I said, you got to break the tension. This is about to explode. And so my husband gets up to ask his question, but first he's like, you know, we may come from different perspectives, but I think we can all agree that we now have a closer idea of the doctrine of hell. And the whole room just erupted into laughter, and you could feel that tension going down.
Yeah.
And so kind of that's what I see happening in our culture, and that y'all are just really being able to, with all this tension that keeps building up, the Babylon Bee is one of those ones that can like kind of make people laugh and kind of break down that tension. So we're just so thankful for what you do.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that we're accomplishing that. That's what we hope to do.
So Amy has some fun questions. So that's our theological stuff. We wanted to talk deep worldview stuff, or, you know, as deep as you can. But Amy, you and I came up before we started with some of these, like, okay, we really got to know sort of questions. So what are some of those?
Yeah. So I was just going to say that one of the things that even on seminary campuses, where we would always get together and joke about, oh my gosh, did you see what the bee had out? And we loved how you guys were basically equal opportunity when it came to poking fun and satire. So one of the things we were really curious about is like, how has the reception been? Because you're unashamed. You will go after everybody and address everyone to include the church itself. So how has that reception been?
We want to know who's been the most offended, who's taken it like, and just gotten ragey over it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. The, probably
what group? Groups? No individuals.
The most vocal group, I guess, of haters, if for lack of a better word, of the Babylon Bee would probably come from like the ex-evangelical progressive Christian world. I think, and especially since I think a lot of them liked the Bee, like maybe for the first couple of years, because we did make fun of Christianity a lot, but when we kind of turned that canon elsewhere, they didn't like that. So we do get a lot of pushback from that group, who's kind of gone all in with the like the woke worldview.
I know there have been. Oh, go ahead.
No, but I guess surprisingly, like atheists and agnostics have been kind of some of our biggest supporters. There has been this weird alliance that's formed, I think, between Christians and a lot of people who don't believe in God, just over this shared commitment to truth. I mean, you know, honest atheists are so because they believe a certain thing is the truth. They value the truth. And so it has been weird to see. We do have a lot of supporters in kind of the atheist world, as well as the more the conservative Christian world. Progressive Christians can't stand us.
That's interesting.
That's so funny. I would have thought they'd been more supportive.
No. They. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of what we do kind of goes after, like, you know, what we're doing with this book, the wokeness, which has really made its way into a lot of the church. And maybe we can talk about that later. But there has been this this infiltration of kind of the, like, the neo-Marxist oppressor versus oppressed worldview, racial politics and things like that in the church. And I think those folks particularly have been pretty sensitive to our satire.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. So I got a quick question, because I've seen this come up before. How many times have y'all been taken seriously? Like, there was one instance a few years ago where they actually took your news report, and I'm blanking on what it was, but
it was CNN maybe.
Yeah. They took it seriously. So how many times has that happened, or what has been, like, the silliest instance of people genuinely thinking you're reporting authentic news?
Yeah, there's been a few. I think the two that come to mind, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we ran a headline that says, you know, Trump says, "I have done more for Christianity than Jesus." And that one got a lot of people, because that, you can actually picture Trump saying,
I can picture,
like,
Trump saying,
you really can.
And so that went viral for that reason. A lot of people believed it. The other one that I thought was pretty funny, that people, a lot of folks on the left believe, and they loved it. They actually were very inspired by it, was after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, we ran a headline that said, like, LeBron James wears, like, a lace collar to commemorate RBG. And we had him there with his, like, his judge's lace collar. And that went mega viral. Like, the editor-in-chief of Elle magazine in New York shared it. It went viral, like, in fashion circles in Paris. Like, everyone was so inspired by this thing, like, you know, that LeBron had honored RBG in such a touching way. And so, you know, that's what part of what makes satire work is, like, you have to kind of be very close to the truth for it to hit right. We're essentially exaggerating the truth a little bit. And
did LeBron ever reach out? Like, have you ever had any of the celebrities that you've written about be like, man, that was solid stuff. Thanks. That's hilarious.
Yeah, we had. So during the lockdowns, we had Patton Oswalt. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a comedian. He voiced the Rat and Ratatouille, and he does a lot of.
Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
So, I knew that would get you. I love that movie, too. But anyway, he had said something about like, during the lockdowns, he had made this comment, like, you know, all these conservatives, you know, they just want to go to their dumb Fuddruckers burger joint. And, you know, they're so selfish for wanting to leave their homes and stuff like that. So we had published this article and the headline was celebrities spell out, "We're all in this together," with their yachts.
And I remember that one too. So,
kind of this commentary on the out of touch celebrity. And he retweeted that joke, basically saying, like, "You guys got me good. Way to go. I've been owned," you know.
Yes. And so that's like awesome. The best possible scenario right there.
I absolutely love it. And that's one thing that about comedy, kind of like what I alluded to earlier. Even if you don't agree with the other side, you kind of can respect the joke, and comedians kind of do have that mutual respect for each other. So it's fun when we can make the other side laugh.
Yeah. I love just the way that it builds bridges. So, like, fun, you know, other story. I actually wrote a paper on the role of humor in college. And it was after, I don't know if I planned on it. I watched, and for the life of me, I can't remember which movie. It's a Nicolas Cage movie where he has gotten, like, captured by a bunch of terrorists, and they're all standing around looking all mean and angry.
I think that's every Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah, right.
I know, right? I know.
Except for the Christmas one.
Which one is it? But what he does is he starts telling "Yo Mama So Fat" jokes. And it's like these hardened, burly, muscly guys are, like, kind of all serious at first, and then they start kind of going, tell us another one. And he keeps going until they drop their guns, and then of course he, you know, beats them all to smithereens and escapes. But it's like this idea of humor being disarming.
Yeah.
I think is a very real thing. And that was just like this, like almost tangible picture of what that would look like. It was someone actually armed and getting disarmed with humor. And it sounds like that's one of the ways that we build bridges, really. And we always need to start with ourselves. You can't start out with just making fun of someone else. You have to do it to yourself, which is why I think the Babylon Bee was so successful, is you started with, you know, us first. You started with the church first, to where it was clear it's not just a bunch of bitter people that are just trying to parody everybody else's views. We're parodying ourselves first. And, you know, that good self-effacing humor, it really goes a long way. So I love that y'all are keeping that alive. I love that you're building bridges. I love that people, you know, even like, and of course his mind just, Dave Chappelle, don't agree with a lot of stuff that Dave Chappelle thinks, but I like that we have this one little area where we can be on the same side. And that's part of what it means to be salt and light, is to be, we're not always against everything. We don't have to take everything so seriously, but we can stand together as in humanity, and to support each other. And there's something beautiful about that, the way, you know, that God designed us to be, you know, even if, I don't know, it's kind of like that great, back in, I think it was World War II, where they had that ceasefire on Christmas. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The, like on the war and Christmas?
No, it was you had the Germans,
during World War One.
Was that World War One?
World War One and World War Two.
And they, it's Christmas, and they like start singing, and eventually they all come out, they're sharing pictures and gifts and stuff like that. It was like this one day that brought them together, even though they're normal enemies. And I think that humor can kind of do the same thing. You know, normally we would be opponents, you know, ideologically, but we've got this thing that we can share.
Yeah, that's the hope. You know, I would love to see that. I think, you know, there's going to have to be a lot more of that. You know, the bee, we kind of have our own little section of the internet and the culture, I guess. But I hope what we're doing encourages more of that. I think it could be really healing for our country and our culture, for sure.
Yep. Healing. I like that. Mm-hmm. So on that note, we will end. But Amy, would you like to pray us out?
Sure. Father God, we are so grateful that we were able to gather here and share some laughs and talks about just an important aspect of evangelism and reaching people for you. And Lord, we just pray for a hand of protection over Babylon Bee Ministry, because they are doing outreach and they're doing great things. And we're just so grateful to be able to come and laugh and be able to learn and grow from one another. And just thank you for every moment you give us together. In holy name, amen.
Amen.
This has been a Mama Bear Apologetics recording. To learn more about Mama Bear Apologetics, please visit us on the web at www.mamabearapologetics.com.
We hope you learned a little more about how to sift through ideas, accept the good, reject the bad, and now you can go teach your kids to do the same.
Do you have any questions? Or maybe some ideas about future podcast episodes?
Send us an email to askthemamabears@gmail.com and we'll do our best.
Rise up, ladies.
Rise up, Mama Bears.
We are all in this together.